This talk was recorded at Against the Stream Buddhist Meditation Society in Los Angeles and is freely offered for your enjoyment. For more information, please visit againstthestream.org.
So I'm calling the half of you have not been here, so let me just kind of tell you where we are a little bit. We are talking about the Satipatthana Sutta. That word is a Pali word that means something like establishing awareness or establishing mindfulness. And these are instructions from the Buddha about where to place our attention. It's interesting, I was reading the introduction to the sutta. Of course, this is just one translation. But it's something right at the beginning about what the promise of the practice of Satipatthana is, what all of this establishing mindfulness in the body and in feeling tones and in our mind states and the reflections on impermanence and all of the five lists in the fourth foundation of which this tonight's teaching is one of those lists of the dhammas. It says bhikkhus, and bhikkhus is just anybody who's practicing. This is the direct path for the purification of beings, for the surmounting of sorrow and lamentation, for the disappearance of dukkha and discontent, for acquiring the true method, for the realization of awakening, namely the four Satipatthanas. So, again, we see this kind of central theme of suffering and discontent and this word dukkha. Dukkha is an interesting word, and it's, you know, it's often translated as suffering, but it's not exactly what it means. It kind of is the word the first part of the word du or du. It kind of means something like badly or like a difficulty. And the word ka, it has to do with kind of like the hole in an axle, and the idea is that it fits badly, and that the result of that is like you get this bumpy ride, right? So the sense of it is not necessarily about the fact that you often hear Buddhism portrayed as the Buddha saying that life is suffering, and that's a bad, wrong translation. Mary's laughing because we were talking about this today. We had a teacher here recently who said Buddha said life is suffering, and that's not at all the case. What is being said is that, at least in the context of the first noble truth, which is the first truth of the kind of most foundational teachings in Buddhism, the Buddha said there is dukkha. There is this dissatisfactoriness, this kind of it's not quite rightness. And it points more to the fact that you could say that not that necessarily that all of life is suffering, but that because of the characteristics of everything that we experience, everything that can be known to us, none of it is, in a sense, satisfactory, because it's impermanent. But there's no, if we especially through kind of this experience or this exploration of the sense bases, if we try to cling to all pleasurable experiences through the senses, in a world where everything is impermanent, then we're going to experience suffering out of a sort of sense of wanting to cling to and have the experience of pleasure all the time. The Buddha said dukkha. He could actually give a list. He says, birth is dukkha. Aging is dukkha, sickness is dukkha, death is dukkha. not getting what you want is dukkha, being bound to what is displeasing is dukkha. And this kind of exploration of dukkha, or this what is kind of talked about as dissatisfactoriness, can include suffering. And it's important to know the distinction that the dukkha that is in that list has to do with, first, the natural experiences of the process of having a body, and the aging and illness and death that is associated with just having a physical form. There's nothing we can do about that. Then there's the kind of the other half of like not getting our desires met, not getting what we want, being bound to what we don't like, that this is a sort of self-generated suffering that arises out of not wanting it to be the way that it is. Is this making sense at all? So the Four Noble Truths goes on to point out that the aspect of dukkha that is suffering, that is self-generated, has a cause, or has its sort of conditional factors lying in the states of mind that sort of color our relationship to life. And those two states of mind that we're constantly focusing on are aversion and attachment. And that out of these two, something's called defilements, a whole lot of our suffering exists. So there is suffering, which is part of this umbrella experience of dukkha, and that suffering is self-generated, and it arises out of our pushing away what is displeasing to us and grasping at what is preferable or pleasurable or what we want, what we desire. So there's that craving is the cause of that level of self-generated suffering. Now, how does craving come into being? The Buddha said that nothing exists independent of the causes and conditions that bring an experience into being. So that's a simple cause and effect relationship between everything that exists and its causes. And the key here, just like the first two Noble Truths are pointing out, that if suffering is self-generated and it exists with a cause of aversion and grasping, then letting go of those causes will bring an end to the suffering, self-generated suffering. This teaching on the six sense bases is pretty much where the rubber hits the road, because it is through the six sense bases that we experience the all, everything that it is that we are attached to and aversive to. There's a teaching called the 12 links of dependent origination. And I think if we can isolate a few of the steps in that process, that's basically the 12 steps of dependent origination are kind of like the Buddhist way of talking about how the world got created on some level. And I'm not taking you there. But there are some steps in the middle of that that have to do with our direct experience here related to our sensory experience. And they have causal conditional relationships to one another. So, because we have a form, a physical form, we have these sense bases. The sense bases exist in dependence upon having this physical form. Without the form, we wouldn't have these six ways of knowing the world the way that we do. So you can understand quite easily that without this form, without the physical, mechanical experience, the sense gates we wouldn't know the world in the way that we do now. And since we've already sort of established, or at least I've said that my direct experience would demonstrate that the only way we know the world is through these six sense gates, that's important to realize that that exists because we have a form. Now, because we have sensational experiences and external phenomenal experience, then because of this external phenomenal experience, we can make contact with the world. Without light and sound and tastes and smells, which are related to the external world, we wouldn't be able to have this sort of experience of making contact with it. You can see that each of these things plays off one another and doesn't exist as a solid, static, solitary, essential experience without the other parts. How would we know seeing without sensory impressions to be seen? It's very interesting, right? Like, what would happen if there was no sights or smells or tastes or anything? Contact conditions feeling. Now, for those of you who are here, in a Buddhist sense, feelings constitute the entirety of the second foundation of mindfulness. Feelings are not like emotional experiences. They have to do with the experience, as I said a few weeks ago, that everything that we experience as either we experience it as something that's pleasant, something that's unpleasant, or something that's somewhere in between, maybe neutral for us. We're indifferent to it. It takes the sense bases, a sensual experience, and consciousness to converge to produce feeling. That feeling in and of itself is conditioned by each of those experiences arising, co-arising at the same moment. So it's very interesting to watch that through mindfulness, to be able to see, like we did with the sounds, that there's the base, and then there's the external experience, and consciousness all converging at the same time for that experience to be known to us. Now, out of that experience arises a sort of conditioned sense that we like it or dislike it, or it kind of bores us. Pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. Feeling conditions the mind states of aversion and attachment, which we already established a bit earlier, were the kind of central mind states that were responsible for the self-generated suffering that we experience. So all of this is sort of like we get this sort of internal map of our subjective human experience, and a kind of an understanding of how the chain of events unfolds for us to have the end result of suffering. Now, craving for something to go away or something to stay, to hold on to, conditions clinging. It's possible to have a craving without identifying and holding on to it. Is this making sense to you up to this point? Is there anybody who's totally lost? It's really important to be able to see how it all happens. And what we're doing in meditation is seeing the parts, how they relate to each other, the laws that govern them all, so that we can kind of interrupt the process at any given point. So there are a few different places in that chain of events that we can insert mindfulness and bring a cessation, a third noble truth, to the experience of suffering. So let's back up to, we have a sensual experience. I it's hot. The temperature is hot. It's a hot day. Consciousness meeting the object and the perception, the sense gate, those three elements have arisen together. Out of it being hot, I have what arises in me is an unpleasant feeling of it's too hot. At that moment, if we are meeting that with mindfulness and knowing the experience of the physical sensations of the body, conditioned by the perceptual experience, the phenomenal experience of heat, conditioned by the sun, knowing consciousness is aware of those three elements converging, co-arising, we notice that it has a feeling tone that is, this is unpleasant. At that point, that's the first level where we can just go, oh, that's what's happening. In this present moment, it's hot, and I experience that as being unpleasant. What is possible then is for us to go into aversion, to say, I don't want the experience of heat, and to get, you know, all of the kind of internal experiences that will arise with that, pushing away what is true. You can be hot or you can be miserable because it's hot. Hot in and of itself is not suffering. Suffering is everything that's going on inside you in relationship to it just being hot. The hot is just hotting itself. It's fine. Your relationship to heat is the suffering that is self-generated. And it arises out of a mind state of aversion. I don't want it to be this hot right now. Whereas if we were just, it's this hot right now, there would be no suffering. So that's the first level. We can just, when we're in mindfulness and we just see heat feels unpleasant, that's it. If we get into, I don't want it to be hot, and we don't catch it, then we're in aversion. Now we can notice, at that level we can notice, it's hot, it's unpleasant, I wish it would go away, I want this to go away. And we begin to kind of have a sense of suffering at that moment. We can notice it right there and let that experience kind of fall away into impermanence. Then we can add this sort of sense of clinging. You can feel an unpleasant feeling. You can notice aversion arising out of that, conditioned by that feeling. And you can really identify with it and go into sort of a real kind of, I was going to use the word tizzy, which I never used, never. I don't know what that was. You can notice yourself then clinging and suffering in aversion to the present moment, and then notice clinging and let that go, and then sort of return to the reality of the moment and probably whatever chemicals are coursing through your body because you've been in this like aversion too, which then will sort of shift and change. I had an experience a number of years ago where I was, I don't know how good an example of it, but it's sort of an example of clinging, I guess. Well, I'll tell it, and then you can tell me how good an example it is. But I had an experience with a partner of mine who I was in relationship with. We were together, and we had a agreement that it was an exclusive monogamous relationship. And then this person cheated on me. And I was suffering a lot about it. And I was going around and telling everybody my story and what I would do and what should I do and how right I was and how wrong they were and all this sort of stuff for several days. And myself and Vinnie Ferraro, who's the teacher over in San Francisco, who teaches a lot of our retreats, me and I were supposed to go to New Haven, Connecticut, and give a talk together on the cessation of suffering. And this seemed completely problematic, considering I was suffering intensely, and that it seemed wholly inappropriate for me to get up in front of a group of people to talk about not suffering when I was in the middle of like gut-wrenching suffering. And I was living in New York City at the time, and I was reading a book by Ajahn Sumedho, who's kind of one of the senior monastics in the Theravadan tradition, a big influence on a lot of the teachers here and us. And he was saying that when you get into practice, you really begin to look into the beginnings of things. Kind of like what we were talking about here, form leading to senses, senses leading to contact, contact leading to feelings, feelings leading to aversion or grasping. That aversion or grasping identified clinging, like you start to see the chain of events that leading to, like the clinging leading to this sort of like state of like the suffering that I was experiencing. And I thought, okay, let me look at this. So the fact that this person slept around on me doesn't inherently actually cause me any suffering. I wasn't there. I didn't see it. I mean, I have ideas about it. You play over visuals or whatever you do, you know, to torture yourself. And I realized, well, that isn't actually inherently causing me any suffering. And his assertion was that if there was any, he was saying, he said something about 100% of our suffering is related to a condition in the mind of aversion or grasping. 100%. And that there's no blame for any external conditions. You cannot blame any external conditions. That was a pretty heavy statement. Considering, yeah, but I'm right. They weren't supposed to cheat on me, right? Now, so I said, okay, let me do this. Let me really, what is the beginning of this suffering? What's at the begin? What is it that's at the deepest level conditioning this? If I'm going to take full responsibility for my suffering over this person who cheated on me, right? I noticed that where the clinging was and why I was suffering is because I was totally attached to a version of the story of the way our relationship was going to go that now completely argued with the current reality of what it was. Now, on a relative level, nobody is saying you shouldn't feel bad if your partner cheats on you, right? On the relative level, of course, there should be new boundaries and conversations and consequences. No one, on the relative level, we're not saying, as a Buddhist, you become a doormat. Right? That's not. But if we're concerned with the ways that we are self-generating suffering, I just realized in that moment that I had an attachment to a story about the way our relationship was supposed to be that I wasn't letting go of, and kind of turning towards, what do I do now? And the minute I realized that, it was like I could breathe and the contraction left my body. And it was just like, and then I could teach the class because I figured something, you know, figured something out based on the teachings of the Buddha. I saw that the suffering that I had, there was a degree, maybe all of it, was self-generated. That I was attached. I had an attachment to a story about the way it should be that argued with reality. Reality was, our relationship was like this. And I wanted to be like this, and I was going to fight with every cell of my body to somehow reference that old story. And when I did that, let that go, I was able to let go of the suffering. Now, that story, that exists in the sense base of the mind. That's a story that, to sort of bring it back, that's all in the mind. But we could also see how it's all in the mind. Ultimately, all aversions and graspings are in the mind. But you could have that same experience with just general sensory experiences. how do I bring it home? I guess the last thing I'll say is that when you start to see that it's all conditioned, that it's all arising out of, that it's empty, and that yet we take it so personally. Every little idea that comes through our head is like real, and we believe it, and it causes suffering, or it doesn't. The more we start to kind of see that it's not personal. It's just sights and sounds and thoughts and images arising and passing based on current conditions, based on all of our backlogs of experience that touches into conditionings that we have. We start to take it a lot less personally. And that there's something in these teachings that's sort of pointing to the emptiness of it all. That in many ways is the ultimate kind of teaching. May you realize emptiness. Just not in your bank account. That's what I got for you.
You have just listened to a podcast from Against the Stream Buddhist Meditation Society. If you'd like to make a contribution to help support these teachings, please visit againstthestream.org.